Did extraterrestrials give ancient Egypt the technology to build the Great Pyramids? If not, how did they do it? Well, today we talk to Egyptologist Nicholas Brown. We'll talk about how he doesn't think aliens contributed. Are we just wishful thinking? I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Join us for the conversation as we welcome for the first time to the Truth Be Told studios, Egyptologist Nicholas Brown.
Nicholas,
how are you doing?
Well, this is going to be a great conversation. I was telling you before the show, I said majority of the people we have on believe so much about aliens created or helped create the pyramids and the Great Pyramid, and they even believe there's a lot of different theories about the Great Pyramid of, you know, alien base and pretty much everything else. So we're going to get started and give us your background. So you are an Egyptologist. I'm sure you've been to Egypt, right?
Yeah, no. So I am an American Egyptologist. So right. I was born and raised here in California.
Okay.
And back in 2012, I actually moved to Cairo and ended up getting a degree from the American University in Cairo. In Egyptology or Egyptian archaeology. So I have a lot of experience in Egypt. I've been living there on and off for the past decade now, and working there, I should say, as well. So it's a pretty amazing place, wonderful people, wonderful culture, and obviously the history and the archaeology is very captivating and, you know, really is really interesting topic for many different people and many different groups. And so some, you know, 5,000 years later, we're still talking about the ancient Egyptians. So they certainly left their mark.
Yeah, of course. I mean, ancient aliens. I go to many UFO conferences around the country, around the world, that still believe that they had some type of, you know, from the Anunnaki to Peru to Egypt. There's, you know, been a lot of a talk about how aliens have been a huge part of creating this. And there's sometimes even hieroglyphics that show strange things that look like they would be considered, you know, an astronaut or a helicopter or certain things like that. From your perspective and your research, what do you think those are? I mean, how could they create something that hadn't even been created yet? Or is it just a lucky carvenship of, you know, some artist or, what do you think?
No, absolutely. I mean, these are definitely, valid points to call into question or to think about, definitely. And especially with the internet and just the amount of photographs and videos and material that's out there. I can see and understand why people might think or be led to believe that, you know, maybe some extraterrestrial force or aliens or whatever built the pyramids or these other monuments in Egypt. But as an Egyptologist and as an archaeologist, I really try to base my work and my own research and studies on facts and what I can see on the ground and what's tangible and what I have right in front of me. And as far as I'm concerned, and the entirety really of Egyptology is concerned, we are of the belief that the ancient Egyptians themselves were the ones who built these monuments. And there's just an astounding amount of proof and evidence from Egypt to support that argument that, you know, again, these ancient people were the ones who built these monuments. That's the amazing thing about Egyptian archaeology and the fact that Egypt is located in northern Africa in the Sahara. You have this desert climate, which really helps to preserve and to keep all this, you know, written evidence, this archaeological evidence of these ancient people and how and why they built the pyramids. So,
well, let me ask you this, because let's just say that aliens did not, you know, which is very possible, you know, because we don't know. That's the thing, is a lot of people that say they did, there's really no proof. You know, we don't have any aircraft, we don't have any spacecraft, we don't have any bodies, we don't have anything other than you know, like I said, hieroglyphs or something that might be aliens. But how would Egyptians, I know they had a lot of people, you know, a lot of people to do this. How did they get the rock? Because the rock wasn't even from that area. Mm-hmm. How did they get the rock? Because I believe the Great Pyramid was even built way before many of the other pyramids that are there now. So how did they get the rock from where they got it from, and then also laid them so precisely and made this, like you said, a monument that's been there for thousands of years?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't mind, Tony, what I like to do right now is perhaps correct a couple of misconceptions,
please,
you know, about the pyramids and yeah, these facts and these ideas that they're these perfect, you know, perfectly engineered monuments and precise and all this stuff. And first off, I do have to say that, you know, this idea that the pyramids are constructed from stone that, you know, isn't even from the local area, it's just, right. It's not true. We actually, in fact, have the quarry of the Great Pyramid, the largest pyramid at Giza, right next door to it. And so I think, Tony, if you don't mind, if you pull up the third image that I sent you guys earlier, this is, in fact, the quarry at the Giza Plateau, which you can clearly see the stone blocks being carved out, right? All those little squares in the bottom right there. These were the stones that were used as the center or the fill of the Great Pyramid, which is in the background of this image as well. And so, you know, these monuments are being made from local materials being sourced at the site. And when you think of human engineering and just the convenience of being able to quarry right at the site and then move the stones, you know, not that far away to build this monument, it, you know, it makes sense that the Egyptians were smart and kind of thought through this. Now, I will say, there were different materials being brought into Giza to help and be used within the construction of the pyramid as well. Right. So you've got red granite, which is coming from the south, from Aswan, modern day Aswan, as well as the casing stones or kind of the finishing stones on the outside. Those came from a quarry called Tura, which is located across the Nile. So in the area of modern day Cairo, but those were being shipped in as well. But almost like 80% of this monument, you know, was being built from locally sourced materials. And it's interesting for those of us who have been able to go to Egypt and see the pyramids in person and see these monuments up close. What's interesting to note and to take into consideration is we always read in these books about how there are these, you know, precise monuments that were built with such accurate precision and everything. But when you look up close, you actually see that the core of these monuments is actually not as neat as you would expect it to be. Right. And so, you know, there's lots of gaps between the stones. There's lots of mortar and kind of fill being pushed in between these irregularly cut blocks. And so that's important to take into consideration, too, that, you know, there is that human element to them, if you will. You know, they're not these perfectly square blocks that are being, you know, placed one on top of the other. But there is room for error and for, you know, areas that needed to be fixed and kind of touched up as well.
We've heard about, especially the Great Pyramid, how this, you know, there's so many different reasons why it was built. So can you tell us about the Great Pyramid and then the pyramids in general, why they were built? Because a lot of them weren't, they don't have any mummies or anything in there. So why do you think they were built, especially the Great Pyramid?
Yeah. So the pyramids, in culminating with the Great Pyramid at Giza, were funerary monuments for the god king, right? For this pharaoh who was living and was seen as a living deity during his life and during his reign. And when you track the early history of Egypt up until the building of the Great Pyramid, we actually see an evolution of royal funerary monuments, which ultimately ends in the you know, true pyramid form, which is what we see at the Giza Plateau. So there's a famous site south of the Giza Plateau called Saqqara, where the Step Pyramid is located. And this was the world's first monumental building built entirely of stone. And what started out as one kind of level rectangle mastaba tomb, or this kind of a flat-topped tomb that was pretty common during that period, the Egyptian architect Imhotep actually decided to then build several steps on top of this, you know, traditional base. Exactly. Yeah, here we go. So here's the step pyramid. So instead of creating just one step, he created several. And this was built for the third dynasty king, Djoser. I already mentioned his architect was Imhotep, who actually was such a renowned mathematician and architect and engineer that later in Egyptian history, Imhotep actually became deified as like a type of saint and was actually worshipped by ancient Egyptians for his skill as well. And so, you know, the fact that, yes, we have not found too many mummies in these pyramids, we haven't really found any funerary goods or golden treasure or, you know, anything like the tomb of Tutankhamun, let's say. The fact that we're lacking that evidence doesn't mean that these weren't used as funerary monuments, right? There's plenty of evidence from ancient Egypt of tomb robberies occurring. Again, these monuments have stood the test of time and have been there for thousands of years and essentially act as kind of like an X marks the spot, right? And so any thief or any robber is going to want to eventually break in to not only see what's inside, but, you know, if they've heard of these golden treasures, to then go and find what's there. And we do actually, even now that I'm thinking about it, we have pyramids from a site called Dashur, which is south of Saqqara. So, you know, kind of within the Cairo vicinity today, near the Fayum Oasis. And at the site in Dashur in the late 1800s, they actually found a tomb of a princess in a pyramid with lots of, you know, golden jewelry. Her mummy was preserved. So, you know, again, just because we haven't found preserved elements at the Giza Plateau of mummies or funerary goods and treasures doesn't mean that they weren't once there.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's fascinating to think that the ones that are the pyramids that are there, are they finding, and I'm sure they have, are they finding that pyramids built on top of pyramids? Because I went to Chichen Itza not too long ago, and they were saying that they had built these pyramids on top of a lot of older pyramids. Are they finding that at all?
So as far as I'm aware, we don't have any evidence of that from Egypt. We do have evidence of kings using older kings' kind of temples or palaces or statues even, or other monuments, and kind of recarving their name over them and stuff. But, you know, as far as pyramids go, again, I'm not aware of any type of evidence like that from Egypt itself, where one is kind of built on top of the other.
Right.
So,
all right, that makes sense. Well, and are you finding that the different ages, what is the oldest that you have found, the pyramids, and what's kind of one of the last ones that you feel was built?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as I mentioned, and as you just had pulled up the image earlier a second ago, the oldest, what we would consider pyramid from Egypt that we have is the Step Pyramid, Saqqara. Mm-hmm. So this dates to Dynasty 3.
That one.
You have to forgive me, I'm terrible with my dates here.
That's
so
okay.
yeah, in terms of BC, I'm not, you know, not 100% sure there, but that is the oldest pyramid that we have for a king. And one of the latest that we have dates then, you know, centuries later to the 12th dynasty during the Middle Kingdom. This is the pyramid of Senusrit III at Dashur, which is that site that I just mentioned a moment ago as well. But that's the latest for a king. And then what happens is, because these pyramids, you know, became such targets for rampant looting and theft, the kings actually ended up deciding to build, you know, kind of secret hidden tombs instead, carved into the, you know, the mountains or the cliffs. And so that's how we get the famous site like the Valley of the Kings, which is in Luxor. which was a New Kingdom necropolis. So this is roughly 1500 BC to 1000 BC. So again, you know, in terms of this evolution of royal funerary monuments, it does change and evolve over Egyptian history, which makes sense too, right? Because the Egyptians were around for over 5,000 years.
Oh yeah, long time.
So, you know, no civilization is going to be consistent and the same over that period of time.
I mean, we've only been around a couple hundred and we're not consistent. So
exactly. So I will say though, you know, even though Senusrit III is one of the last pharaohs to have a pyramid, during the New Kingdom, private and elite individuals actually start making mini pyramids instead. And then of course there are the famous pyramids that are now in the Sudan, which were built by the kings who ruled from Sudan, but actually took over Egypt for a period of time and were inspired to build pyramids from what they had seen in Egypt happening as well. Hmm. So, you know, even though Egyptian kings stopped building pyramids, they don't completely go out of fashion and don't stop being used.
Well, let's go back to the actually building of these pyramids. Okay, we realized that the stone was local, very, I mean, pretty much right next door. It's like building a house and the forest is right next door to the home. So they don't have cranes. They don't have trucks. They don't have any of, you know, the equipment we have today. How did they move it?
Yeah.
And how did not only just move it, but lift to the top of these pyramids to make it the shapes they are?
Yeah. So I will say right off the bat, and this might be shooting myself in the foot here, but we as Egyptologists, even ourselves, will admit we do not know 100% how the pyramids were built.
There it is. No, just kidding.
So, you know, I will preface with that. And again, that's me and my colleagues, you know, will flat out say this and admit this ourselves. But we have a pretty good idea of how they were built. And again, we have plenty of evidence of ancient Egyptians talking about building these monuments and depictions of them building these grand, huge monuments and everything. And so, you know, to answer the first part of your question here, you know, how were these blocks even moved? You know, as a lot of people admit, ancient Egypt had a large labor force and workforce at the king's disposal. And essentially when, you know, Pharaoh, while he was a living deity and, you know, a king of Egypt, he also was kind of an authoritarian ruler, if you will. You know, when you have that much power at your disposal, it's quite easy in a way, especially when you're a living god too, right? To then convince the masses to build a huge pile of stone for you and only for you, you know, to bury your dead body. You know, the first thing to take into consideration and to really keep in mind is the fact that, again, there were, you know, tens of thousands of men, possibly women, working on these monuments, moving these stones. We have written evidence where these laborers, they were actually being broken up into different gangs or different workforces or groups, each with like a supervisor who then answered to another supervisor. So there was very much an administrative kind of bureaucratic organization to this labor force as well. And what's fun with these labor groups or these gangs is they all had different names and nicknames, and we know a few of those. One group was called the Friends of Khufu, who built the Great Pyramid.
Right.
Another group, which is a personal favorite, they were the Drunkards of Menkaure. So he built the smallest pyramid at Giza. So you can imagine they had some fun with naming, giving themselves nicknames and whatnot. Which is nice to consider. It adds kind of the human element to these people. So, you know, we've got a huge labor force. And then in terms of technology and how they move these blocks and stuff, you know, again, with manpower and being able to pull, you know, different heavy blocks on wooden sledges, you know, is the main way that they transported these blocks. And we have the wooden sledges, we have, you know, the hammers and chisels that they were using to carve out these stone blocks. I think, Tony, if you don't mind, if you pull up the fourth picture.
Sure.
What I've got here to show the audience is this is a tomb scene from Derobersha, from the tomb of Jehutihotep. And while this is a large colossal statue that's being transported by a group of workmen, it's not an actual stone block in the pyramids. What I wanted to show is the fact that you can see the statue, it's tied to a wooden sled being pulled by these four different lines of men. And you see a little guy at the front of the statue there, he's pouring from a jar a bunch of water, right, to wet the sand that's in front of this statue. And there was actually a group of scientists and Egyptologists and researchers from the University of Amsterdam who did some experimental archaeology to figure out, okay, how much force, how much labor is required to move these heavy monuments and heavy stones in ancient Egypt. And when they tried pulling these stone blocks on just dry sand, mm-hmm. they found it very cumbersome, lots of friction from the sand. The sand would pile up and would cause, you know, needing more force to actually move these blocks. But in the course of their experiments, when they tried the water trick, just pouring water straight up in front of the wooden sledge, it significantly reduced the amount of energy and force that was needed to move the blocks. It created less friction, which, you know, it almost allowed the block to kind of glide a little bit smoother, if mm-hmm. you will, over the surface of the sand as they were moving these blocks. So that's, you know, again, we have artistic depictions, we have the archaeological evidence of these sledges. So there's all of that to help explain, you know, the transport of these blocks themselves. And then finally, you know, your last question of how were these blocks lifted up and put into place? And so this is where Egyptologists have to admit, we're not entirely sure. We don't really have, you know, concrete 100% proof evidence of this is how they do it. There's a number of theories as to how this was done. Personally, the most convincing to me is a series of ramps made of earth and mud brick. To kind of glide these stones, if you will, or drag them up.
I was going to say pushing tons of rock. I don't know that that's a good word.
Maybe that word was there on my part. But certainly, you know, pulling, right. dragging these large stone blocks up this giant monument. And for me, the most convincing is a combination of a straight ramp with one that then kind of spiraled or circled around as it got towards the top. But other archaeologists have suggested, you know, just one continuous straight ramp that kind of went up as the, it would mm-hmm. build up as the pyramid was being built. Another architect has proposed that perhaps there's a series of internal ramps within the pyramid that we just can't see today. I'm personally less convinced by that one, but, you know, they've argued their case and it's out there. It's available for people to read and interpret themselves.
Well, can I ask a quick question? I've never been there. I mean, my goal was to one day get to experience the Great Pyramid and the pyramids of Egypt. But how is the land surface? I mean, I know it's desert, but is it like desert here where it's very soft and you sink a little bit? If that's the case, by using wood planks or whatever, wouldn't that much tons of rock, wouldn't that sink as they're pulling it, the sand keep building up in front of it to where it was almost impossible to pull? I mean, because I've seen where that, you know, how they load ships into the water, you know, they have the roll, they just roll it into the water. So I could see that if it was a solid surface to get to the pyramid itself. And then, yeah, like you said, another story of getting it up.
Yeah, absolutely. So no, this is a valid question as well. And you're right in that it is a desert landscape. And so, you know, while the surface, you know, there's quite a bit of soft sand, you know, eventually underneath there is kind of a hard, compact bedrock layer, right? We saw that in the quarry picture where, you know, right on the Giza Plateau, there's a whole quarry of bedrock, you know, that they were using mm-hmm. to build this monument and stuff. So this is why, you know, this group from Amsterdam, as they did their experiments and stuff, they found, you know, by using water, by having the wood sledges, the wood planks to drag along with the manpower to actually pull these you know, stone blocks. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the perfect combination of everything to make it work. So if you're missing one, you can't really get the other parts to work as well.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, as you know, again, as far as I know, as an Egyptologist, that's the accepted theory. The evidence that I can see and understand makes sense to me, and you know, so yeah.
So okay, we just talked about this of showing, you know, how they moved these statues.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what we have now is architectures. We are architects, and they mm-hmm. create the design. And do we have any evidence of like a architectural design before they even built, or any hieroglyphics that might show that how they designed it?
Yeah, so we do for other pyramids and other monuments mm-hmm. in Egypt. Absolutely. We've got architectural plans. We have mathematical papyri that show that the ancient Egyptians were great mathematicians. They knew geometry. They could figure out, you know, area, volume of three-dimensional shapes. And they were, you know, obviously phenomenal architects as well, right? You look at Karnak Temple, you see the pyramids at Giza, the Valley of the Kings. Mm-hmm. It's right in front of us that they knew what they were doing, and they were quite capable as well. And so I do have for you, so if you pull up the first picture, we can show the audience here. This is called the Rhind Papyrus. This is at the British Museum. This is one of the mathematical papyri from ancient Egypt. And you can see on the left-hand side, a series of pyramids where the scribe was practicing his geometry skills and figuring out the area and the volume and whatnot of these different pyramids as well. And then if you don't mind, Tony, if you pull up picture 5, if you've got that.
5, I do, right there.
So this is Hemiunu. So this is the architect of the Great Pyramid at Giza. So his tomb was discovered at the Giza Plateau. In his tomb, he says that I'm the architect. I, you know, helped build this pyramid. He was a relative of Khufu's, and Khufu is the king who built the Great Pyramid at Giza. So, you know, I just wanted to show people as well, you know, this is the ancient Egyptian who helped build and design and execute the building of the Great Pyramid.
Right.
And we even, you know, we have papyri as well that are like daily logs and journals that talk about the transport of the stone used to build these pyramids from across the river at Tura to the Giza Plateau. And that's the last image I have for you. That's number 2, if you don't mind pulling that up as well.
There you go.
And this is the Wadi Ajarf papyrus. This was discovered at a site near the Red Sea. And it's called the Diary of Merer. And he was an official who worked under Khufu, who writes in this text about how he organized the group of workmen and how they, you know, were moving these stone blocks from Tura to the Giza Plateau to be used for Khufu's monument as well. And so, you know, again, the state of preservation in Egypt is incredible. And we've got this written evidence, you know, of the Egyptians themselves saying, you know, they are the ones who built this monument. They are the ones who contributed. At the Giza Plateau, we have the extensive workmen's village where all this huge labor force was living. And they were based, it was their base camp essentially for when they were building these monuments. And this is excavation work, which has been carried out by an American Egyptologist, Mark Lehner. Mm-hmm. And even the Egyptian Egyptologist, Zahi Hawass, who's, you know, kind of the famous Egyptologist right now. He, in the late 90s, early 2000s, discovered the tombs of the workmen who were building these monuments as well. And throughout those tombs, you know, they're proclaiming that they helped build these great pyramids and everything as well. And so, yeah.
Well, what, there was a key word that you just said, that they helped build. Helped build it. I mean, yeah, it is fascinating. I still believe they're, you know, do you believe, I mean, just off the topic, do you believe in extraterrestrials at all? Or are you a skeptic of that?
Yeah, I mean,
Not saying that you believe they built, but do you believe just in general?
Right, just in general, if there's life out there beyond our own planet. And I, you know, I'm definitely open to the idea. I don't think we are necessarily the only life in the universe here on Earth. Right. I think that would be pretty, you know, unreasonable to say. What that extraterrestrial life looks like, I have really no idea or no strong opinion on, right? Are they little gray men with big eyes? You know, is it bacteria on one of the moons of Saturn, you know, or whatever, you know?
Right.
That I'm certainly not confident or sure of as well. But, you know, absolutely, I think there is, you know, got to be some kind of life form beyond our own planet here in the Earth. So
I remember interviewing a guy from NASA, and he wrote a book on planets, and he was saying that back in the 80s, you know, there was only just a handful of planets that they knew about, mostly in our solar system. And then he said, you know, in the 90s, probably about 1,000 planets. And then in the 2000s, it was 10,000 planets. And he goes, now, you know, about 40,000 planets. And he said another 10, 20 years, it'll be, so he goes, and many of those potentially have a chance to have life like Earth, which, I mean, so it's kind of like Egypt, I think, with the same thing with, you know, potential of life out there. There's, they're constantly, like we were talking about earlier, you know, they just discovered how many new mummies, what was it, like 20 some mummies recently? So I think there's constantly being discoveries of not only on Earth, but out in the universe. 'Cause I think that's the biggest, you know, like Captain Kirk said, you know, the final frontier.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I think the possibility, I for the people in the chat room, and I have a couple questions from the chat room, and it's mostly about hieroglyphics and stuff. And I'd like to ask you about, but yeah, you know, a lot of people, I think we want to believe that something is out there, something is helping us or help build our society or, you know, human species. So, yeah. So I get where you're coming from too, because I think like some people say, they don't want to take away from the ability of the Egyptian people of that time. Because they were very intelligent. You could tell by the things they created and the things that, and one thing I want to talk about is the mathematics and engineering, of the ancient Egypt. Because we talked about with the architectural, but you have to have the skills, and you would not think that would be a big part of building something like this that, you know, but tell us a little bit more about the complexity of ancient Egypt when it comes to math and engineering.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think as you mentioned just a second ago too, you know, it's important for us to give due credit to the ancient Egyptians, right? They, long before the pyramids were even built, they had developed agriculture, writing, complex religious thought. They had great skill in astronomy, as well as mathematics and engineering. And as we saw, and I mentioned, we have several different papyri which show their mathematical skills.
Right.
They had an understanding of geometry, of algebra, as well. And so it's important, you know, to give them credit, you know, for those areas as well. You know, and in terms of engineering and stuff, we do have some archaeological evidence to show the different tools and devices that they use to help build these monuments, right? We've got plumb bobs, we have set squares to help with creating right angles, other tools to help with accuracy of, you know, essentially a north-south, east-west axis, if you will, you know, using the stars and astronomy at night to lay out the grids and everything for these monuments as well. And yeah, it's, you know, and again, too, we've got the people, right? The engineers and the architects themselves. I showed you Hemiunu, who was the architect of the Great Pyramid, believed to be the architect of the Great Pyramid. And again, too, it you know, not only the monuments like the pyramids at Giza, what they really show and give evidence for is not only the Egyptians' abilities within mathematics and engineering, but also their abilities within bureaucracy and administration and being able to organize themselves and to create these lasting buildings that have been around for thousands of years as well.
Well, we have about 10 more minutes, and I want to get into a little bit more about the pyramid itself. Mm-hmm. What is the peak? I mean, they could have just easily created, you know, just a square box and say this was, you know, a tomb. But what did the peak mean? What did the meaning of some of the designs of the pyramid itself?
Right. So this whole idea of the triangle shape or the pyramid shape, sloping sides up towards the heavens. We, as far as we know as Egyptologists, with what we've translated from religious thought and everything is of the ancient Egyptians, is these monuments had a solar connection, right, to the sun.
Right.
Sun god was one of their main deities in the ancient Egyptian pantheon. And when you think about, when you look at the sun disk today, right, which hopefully not too long, it's bad for your eyes. But what we see is, you know, different rays coming down in kind of a triangle shape, right? So essentially what these giant pyramids are doing is they're emulating this, you know, solar, basically they're creating a solar connection by emulating the rays of the sun kind of coming down from the sky to the earth.
Right.
There's also ideas that they are, you know, transportation machines to help the soul of the deceased ascend into the heavens. I think that idea comes from the step pyramid, which literally kind of looks like a staircase going up to the sky, as we saw from Saqqara as well. So, and then, I mean, there's the fact too, Tony, that, you know, when you think of human labor and, you know, or not even human labor, just human behavior in general, right? We're always trying to find shortcuts or make work easier and less complicated. And one of the easiest ways to stack a bunch of stones is to put them in a pyramid shape, right? Or a mountain mm-hmm. shape. So, you know, this is also one of the counter arguments to say, oh, aliens built pyramids all over the world. Well, I think humans just figured out in antiquity that the easiest way to make a large, tall structure was to stack stones in, you know, a receding kind of mound shape as well. So, you know, that should be taken into consideration as well. So I think it's a combo of things. I think it's the engineering and how it's, you know, as you build a pyramid, it gets easier and easier to stack the stones at the top, along with their connections to the solar and religious thoughts of the ancient Egyptians as well.
And what do you think the change at through history of pyramids through the ancient Egypt? Did you see? I mean, other than like, let's look at this one real quick. This one here, and then of course it is different here, like you said, the steps. So you did see a change in the structures as mm-hmm. this, you know, hundreds and thousands of years went on.
Yeah,
is that right? Was it just because each ruler wanted his own design, or something different from the one before? Is that why the change?
Yeah, I think it's a combo of people wanting to leave their own mark, right, and have their own kind of signature style, if you will, along with the fact that the Egyptians, you know, after the building of the step pyramid, they started experimenting with how to evolve these monuments and how to make them different.
Right.
And so we have pyramids from Khufu's father. So Khufu is the one who built the Great Pyramid at Giza. Snefru is his father. Who also built a couple different pyramids in Egypt. You showed one of them earlier from Dashur, which is called the Bent Pyramid. Yes, exactly. This one here, where you can see the Egyptians, they started building it at too steep of an angle, and it started to crack at the foundation. So they then had to lower the angle at the top to finish off the pyramid, which is how we get the bench shape today.
Yeah.
Snefru also built another pyramid, which is possibly kind of the stepping stone between the step pyramids and the true-sided pyramids. That one's at a site called Meidum, where it originally started out as a step pyramid, and then Snefru decided, oh, actually, I want to make it a smooth side, you know, pyramid instead. So he filled in all the steps to smooth out the sides, but what ended up happening is that pyramid actually collapsed. And so it's kind of a ruin today. You can still go see it. Again, it's the pyramid at Meidum, for viewers who are interested to look it up. But so again, we have evidence of pyramid evolution from Egypt. You just have to go looking for it, really, to see it. So,
well, tell us about how, more about ancient Egypt, the look of it. Because I even now, when I drive through the desert and I see that we built towns mm-hmm. in the middle of the desert, and I'm like, why in the hell would you it's like Las Vegas. You're like, how in the hell would you ever think, let's build Las Vegas right here in the middle of the desert? But what was the look like opposed to what we see now when it comes to the tourist? And was it much different, or was it very similar to what we see today?
Yeah, no, this is absolutely a valid question. And, you know, I will start off right off the bat with saying that climate change is not a recent phenomenon, but it has been happening throughout human history. And this certainly is the case from ancient Egypt. And so sites like the Giza Plateau or Saqqara, or kind of these areas around the Nile during the Old Kingdom, okay, so we're talking about 2500 BC-ish. Mm-hmm. The landscape was very much more like a savanna, kind of like the landscape you would think of when you go on safari in Africa. You know, more vegetation, more animals present, more life, essentially. And then we do have evidence, archaeological evidence, in fact, of climate change happening, which ultimately led to the, partially led to the first intermediate period, or the collapse of the Old Kingdom, and these strong rulers who were building the pyramids, like Khufu and Khafre and Menkaure at Giza, the Giza Plateau. So yeah, the landscape was certainly different. For the Egyptians too, the amazing thing for them is their civilization was able to prosper and grow so much because of the Nile River itself, mm-hmm. right? And with the annual flooding, with the lush kind of fertile farmlands around it, that's how they were able to actually build their civilization and survive in this harsh desert environment, is because they had the river right there. Right next to them as well. So yes, while their funerary monuments and villages and towns were ultimately being built kind of in the desert lands, which wouldn't really make sense to do for, you know, survival, ultimately because they were in such close proximity to these lush farmlands and the Nile River itself, they were able to survive and thrive and ultimately grow and build their civilization. So
that's great. Yeah. Well, I always bring in the chat room, and have a Jesse. Mm-hmm. I have Jess, whichever how you pronounce it. But he says we're going back to somewhat of the aliens being involved. Mm-hmm. So why the elongated heads in Egypt, or the sculptures of the mini Dagon figures resembling long heads, big eyes, made to look like extraterrestrials? Mm-hmm. As you're looking at these figures, what how do you explain that? Was it just an imagination, or just to change it up?
No, I think Jess and Jesse, however you say your name, thank you. This is a valid question for sure. You know, this is mostly an exaggeration within Egyptian art. This is what the Egyptological community seems to be in agreement on. The specific examples I'm thinking of, which I believe are the ones you're thinking of as well, such as Akhenaten or his daughters, Nefertiti. Right. This is during a period of Egypt called the Amarna period, where there was a religious, political, and artistic revolution, if you will, or dramatic change in the culture. And so the art during this period, I'm trying to keep this brief and short, but essentially the art during this period is a reflection of the religious thought at the time. And when you look at the examples from Egypt and you try to compare it to before and after, you know, there's really, it doesn't really last. It doesn't really exist beforehand. And so, you know, rather than saying these elongated skulls are aliens or, you know, alien life force, exactly. So this is Akhenaten. This is the ruler during that period. He creates an artistic form, which is actually very much an exaggerated, an exaggeration of the traditional Egyptian art as well. So.
Great. Yeah. Well, this topic is always, I think, you know, it's going to be around way past our lifetime until evidence showing either side. And I think this topic is going to be, it's just like, you know, any type of government conspiracy, it's going to go on and on and on and on for, again, generations to generations. So, but I love this conversation, and I thank you for bringing another side to it. Like I said, we've had many sides of the alien aspect to it, and I appreciate you bringing in an Egyptologist and his experience and research to Truth Be Told. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. And really, you know, again, just the Egyptians have done their job, right? We, thousands of years later, are still talking about them, still talking about these pyramids.
And right.
Obviously, it's a two-sided debate as to how they were built, who built them, but, you know, that's where we are. So.
Well, thank you so much. How do people find you, find out more information about you?
I have an Instagram account, which people are welcome to look me up. It's Nick Brown, Egyptologist. You should be able to find me that way. If you just Google my name and Instagram, it should come up as well. And I have an academia.edu page as well. So if you're interested in my academic work and kind of publishing, published articles and things like this, you can also look there as well. So,
well, that's great. And we thank everybody for tuning in. We appreciate you guys for doing this. We hope you have a great Easter, go out and enjoy yourself. But, again, share the show, leave us a comment, tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear your comments. And, but until next time, next Friday, I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. And thanks, Nick. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.